Welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to episode number 56 of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Edward Lamb, and Sean Orford. Hey, Sean.
Hello, how are you?
I'm all right. I've got the window open, so you may hear some birds tweeting in the background, maybe a gentle breeze.
That's good. Can you hear a gentle breeze? That's
well, there's leaves there, so they kind of indicate, don't they? But
yeah, but people can't see those.
No, no. Okay. No, we'll just imagine it. I'm sure you've all got imagination. Yeah, so hopefully
it's animal of the sea.
Hopefully we've got a good little ambience going on here.
Yeah, an ambulance.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an actual, genuine, with the windows open. I haven't added it in or anything like that.
Yeah, yeah. There's real trees on.
I hope everyone is well. Any new listeners out there, go to liveinthepresent.co.uk, find out more about me, Sean, Ree, the work we're doing and how we can help. Welcome along. This week we're talking about food cravings, smoking, basically addiction in general, which we have discussed in the past, I think episode 12 or 14, one of those two.
It was a long time ago.
It was way back when. Yeah. So we may just repeat ourselves entirely, or we may come out with some new little gems. You never know. But we'll dive in. But yeah, how are you doing, Sean? You had a good week?
I'm good. The issue about the World Cup and football seems to have dominated our society.
Well, a week's a long time in football, because this time last week England was still in with a shout.
Yeah, or a squeak.
And a week on and all the flags have been taken down.
Now, the weird thing for me is I've actually watched a few football matches, which is new world for me.
Uh-huh.
It's quite interesting. So I'm going to go to a football match with Robert and we're going to do some...
What are your views on the whole competition side of that thing? Do you think it's a good thing, competition?
I think competition's pretty stupid, actually. And the issue for me with competition is the people that are disappointed by it. It's like... nine people run a race and there's one winner and eight people that aren't very happy. Do you know what I mean? And everyone says, no, it's the taking part that's the thing.
Yeah.
But why is it that people get so angry and shout at the screens and all that kind of stuff? It's not good energy to me.
Mm. It's a funny one, isn't it? There's been a cool little advert done by, I think it's Visa, for the World Cup. And they've got it's a load of, like, Nobel Peace Prize winners talking about the football in little short clips. Basically, you know, these guys have been working their whole life for peace and tranquility.
Yeah.
But when it comes to football, man,
it's tribe, isn't it? I wonder how much it is like going to the arena and watching the Christians being eaten by the lions. You know, I wonder how much of that bit of human personality is being played out in these things.
Yeah, maybe it's an addiction. Hey, we just need
it could
to,
be.
We all need a little hit of every now and again. A bit of competition. Yeah. I wouldn't mind seeing someone get eaten by a lion. Not necessarily Christian.
You're not fussy.
No, anyone. Yeah, hey ho. No, so yeah, World Cup's everywhere at the moment, isn't it? But not long to go.
Yeah.
But I'm quite enjoying it. And in fact, England being out, it's a bit of a bummer. But it frees the enjoyment up. You're not as tense, I find. Well, I'm not. You just enjoy it.
And the rumbling that I hear listening to people talking about it is that... British football is inundated with foreign players.
Uh-huh.
Therefore, when you take those foreign players out and they go back to their own countries, the amount of Brits that are left in the team actually aren't that good, is the message I get.
Yeah, there's all sorts of reasons, man. I think there's a lot of psychology involved. Well, there is in sport, you know. And in fact, the England team did pay probably a heck of a lot of money. They've got the psychologist box ticked for the team.
Well, it didn't work, did it?
No. Well, yeah, maybe we'll get Sean.
They should have got me.
But it is interesting, that side of things. But they prepared fantastically, and hey-ho, still not come out. I think just not good enough. But Brazil looks amazing place, doesn't it, man? Mm. You've seen that, the backdrop that the BBC have been using in ITV for when they're just discussing the game. Is it Rio they're in or something?
Amazing.
Wow,
what
a place.
Yeah.
It's hard to imagine places like that really exist, I think.
But, you have to go there to see them.
Yeah.
To just check that it's real.
Have you done South America?
No.
Must be the only...
Yeah, I need to get down there.
You've been everywhere.
I fancy one of those things where you get like a Winnebago and you drive right from Canada right the way down to the bottom of South America.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Mm.
Yeah.
Someday. Yeah. Right, we'll dive into this week's topic of the week, which is addiction. There is a blog post to accompany this podcast, which will be published. It'll be published by the time you're hearing this, so check out livingthepresent.co.uk for some long-form words of wisdom from Sean.
Yeah.
But this, we were actually kind of prompted into talking about this by a listener, a fan of ours, who'd emailed in asking us to discuss habits a little bit more and where they come from, how we can change them, how much they're linked to our past and our childhood and how deeply ingrained they can get in within and how to break them. But where do we start, Sean?
I think that we're all addicts. I don't think there's anybody on the planet who isn't an addict. And the way I'm defining addiction is that each of us has an internal chemical environment, so yours is different to mine.
Okay.
And there's things that I do, and that may be things that I eat, behaviours that I have, and those behaviours may be about how I think and how I feel, but also things that I get into my system. So I would include breathing in, which a lot of people do with addictive stuff. What it does is it changes my chemical environment, but I end up, I may start off we assume a child starts as a blank slate, but that's not true, is it? Because you've got all the genetics and you've got all the chemistry from your parents that's in there. So, okay, whatever point you start with, that's your normal. And as you learn, you start creating different normals. And then you establish something that you feel is your right chemistry.
Okay.
And as soon as that level of chemistry drops for any reason, you'll do the behaviours that you need to do to get it back up again. So if you've taught your system to tolerate sugar, to tolerate caffeine, to tolerate nicotine, whatever, as soon as the levels of that chemistry in your system start to drop, then you will do things to bring it back up again to make you feel normal.
There was a quote in it was a kid, I was a huge Radiohead fan.
Yep.
And the artwork in their albums was always amazing. And there was one scribbling that in one of the CD sleeves that said, "Oxygen should be regarded as a drug." As a 16-17-year-old, like, wannabe songwriter, I was like, that's so cool, man. That's right. Yeah. Oxygen's a drug, man.
But it is, if you don't have it, you know, your body chemistry changes and you're desperate to...
Quite quickly.
To get it. Yeah, yeah.
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 How long can you hold your breath underwater for?
I haven't got a clue. It's an experiment. We'll have to try that.
I think I used to be able to get about 30 seconds as a kid, you know, mucking around in the bath.
Yeah.
A bit off topic there.
Yeah. But you get guys that do the pearl diving and they go down for minutes, can they?
Yeah. So they're not as addicted to oxygen as us. They don't need oxygen. Yeah.
Yeah. When they surface, they do. Yeah. Give me oxygen.
The classics are food, aren't they? Or sugar, carbs and smoking and coffee. What's your addiction, Sean? You're a decaf coffee man now, though, aren't you?
Yeah, I don't do decaf. My addiction at the moment is running.
Mm-hmm.
I've gone from this couldn't do it in the beginning to I'm running a marathon every week now. I'm doing the equivalent of 42K in my training program, and when I do it, I feel really good, and I can feel that addiction that never been here before, but that addiction that athletes get to physical activity because you feel really good when you run 14K. Your system's up. It takes me about 2 kilometres to get my system ticking over.
Mm-hmm.
And after 5K, I'm into that kind of elated feeling. And I'm at a point sometimes where it's a bit difficult to stop.
Yep.
Yeah.
Put it out of road.
Yeah.
It's bad for you though, running, man. It's bad for your knees, you know.
No. My knees are amazing. I've got the most amazing knees.
Well-oiled knees.
Yeah. To photograph my knees and put them online. They're amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, no. So we're all, I get it, we're all addicted to something.
So what were you addicted to? What's your... Sugar.
Sugar, yeah. Yeah. It is, sugar and salt.
Yeah.
I love my salty food.
Yeah.
Although...
So, well, we know salt's really bad for you. And as Conrad would say, sugar is the white devil.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well,
there's not a lot down for you then.
I did read an article last night, I think it was on The Guardian, I'll find the link for the show notes. But yeah, 2/3 now of people in Britain are either overweight or obese, which I think overweight's probably a bit harsh, really, because technically I might be overweight, you know, I'm 9 stone and I don't really weigh, but I might be carrying an extra inch than I should around the waist, I don't know. But it's the sugar addiction, isn't it? I think
sugar at the moment is the thing, but at different times it's been salt or it's been fat. I think that all of them are difficult, but it's when you combine them together they become a real problem.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I always come back to is the carb issue. When you eat carbs, comfort foods, you get serotonin in the brain, which is like self-medicating with antidepressant. So I read the increase in the British body weight as an increase in depression. That as things like the recession have bitten in over the last few years, people are going down and getting more depressed and they're self-medicating with carbs.
Mm-hmm.
So carb cycle is feel lousy, eat carbs, put on weight, look in the mirror, feel lousy, eat carbs, feel better. So you start to get bigger and bigger.
Before we came on air, we were talking about the comfort of having things in our mouths, and it begins at an early age.
Yeah.
And then, well, obviously, milk and suckling from the teat and all
that. But as soon as you're born, the first thing that happens to you is something gets put in your mouth. That's through the trauma of birth.
It was a cigarette
first
for me.
Bit of comfort. Yeah, a joint.
I was the famous smoking baby. Yeah.
It's a nipple, it's a teat, it's whatever. And forever after, most people, and by most people I mean virtually everybody, has this association between the oral area and safety and satisfaction and security. So to put things in your mouth, whether it's food, cigarettes, thumbs, nails, whatever, pens, chewing under your glasses, is all about security and creating that sense of safety.
Yeah.
Yeah, and comfort.
Well, yeah, and I know obviously there's a big move now, obviously, to kick cigarettes out completely. And I think that actually I read yesterday there's someone or some level of government trying to get in a complete ban on cigarettes for anyone born after the year 2000, which is a bit weird, sounds a bit weird, but obviously that would make them 14. And then it's going to try and, obviously, in 20, 30 years, maybe that will mean that no one smokes. Unless, and this is linked to some work that I might be doing, there's a big wave of like electronic cigarettes and these water-based ones coming in to replace the tar from the cigarettes, but you're still getting the nicotine hit.
Yeah, so all you're doing is changing the delivery system. You're not changing the addiction.
Yeah.
The magic of smoking as a function is that it means you have to go and do it. So there's things you have to fiddle with and things you have to put in your mouth, which is different to having a patch. Mm. In the workplace, people can, they're usually allowed like 5 minutes every hour if they're nicotine heads to go and have a fag.
Yeah.
Which means that you can get up from your workstation, your desk, and go and have a break and come back again.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're using one of these modern devices that are vapor based, then you're still being able to do that. But effectively, all we're doing is changing the delivery system. We don't solve people's addiction problems by changing that from a fag to a spray. You
know. Well, just coming back to what the listener that emailed us, and she's having trouble breaking old habits, and she's interested, and you can tell she's thought about this a lot, man, because it was a really cool email. But she's interested a lot in the habits that you inherit or learn from those around us as we grow up, and that obviously has a huge impact on her. It's those initial few years, isn't it? Or
and we're all in that position. Yeah, there's going to be an amount of genetic stuff that we've got. There's going to be predispositions and propensities towards certain things in all of us. Yeah, from then onwards, everything is learned. Yeah, but no one is ever defined by their genetics. That's the starting point. We know that your genetic information changes throughout your life. Your genome will change as you learn new things, which gives us the option to learn new behaviours. And that's the point, is people will say to me, that's just the way that I am. And that's never, never true.
Yep.
Yeah, it's the way that you have learned to be. It's the habit structures you've created.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you are the habits that you've invested in. And if those habits are habits of happiness and success, maybe financial, emotional, whatever, then those are the habits that you will keep repeating. So that if someone is a very happy person, and that's their chemistry in their body, if things happen that make them miserable so that chemistry starts to drop, they will go and find things to feel happy about to lift the chemistry back up to normal.
Yep.
Yeah. So happy people are addicted to happiness. Miserable people that are addicted to being miserable, as their chemistry drops, will go and find things to be miserable about to bring their chemistry back up again.
Okay.
Yeah.
The trouble is that, and this was alluded to in the email, which got me really thinking, is that we don't know really, do we? Because we're that deeply ingrained. Okay, everyone knows everyone out there who's smoking knows they shouldn't smoke, but they do it anyway. It's like, what the hell? But there are so many habits that we just do without thinking about. How do we know that they need changing?
But that's mindfulness. That's mindfulness. That's waking up. That's self-development. It's examining who I am.
Okay. What are the indicators, or what potential indicators are there that's something you're doing might be wrong, what you need to change.
I think it's down to what does it make you feel like?
Just mood.
I think that the emotions for all of us are indicators. Is something good? If something is good for you, it will make you feel good. Yeah, and the principle is if it makes you feel good, do more of it. Yeah, if something makes you feel bad, then it's your system telling you something's wrong here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, as you wake up, it may be that the things that make me feel good actually are not good for anybody else. I mean, if I enjoy going around chopping people's legs off, that actually may not be such a good thing for other people.
Unless you're an orthopaedic surgeon. Yeah.
And they need to be chopped off.
Yeah. Yeah. And you've got permission. Yeah.
Signed. The issue is going to be, isn't it, that if the more awake I am to myself, the more I'm going to invest in habits that serve me well, and the more I'm going to question the habits that don't serve me well or don't serve other people well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's waking up. And waking up involves the experience of life, engaging in life, and from my point of view, things like doing mindfulness, doing meditation, stuff like that, so you become more aware. Yep. The magic of doing things like mindfulness and meditation is that you start to become the observer of things. So you can observe yourself doing things and you can observe the negative behaviours.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can begin to change them once you can stand back and observe them. When you're actually in an addiction, so that you can't see anything other than the addiction, that's all there is. If you can stand back for and observe yourself in the addiction, then you can start to change it. Yeah?
That's cool.
Yeah.
What was I going to say? I don't know. I had something really interesting to say then. It's gone. I'm so busy observing myself.
Maybe you're addicted to Alzheimer's. It's going to come and get you.
Another addiction for me, and this has got to be a big one coming up, and because you can see it, is digital addiction and kind of the addiction to just checking your phone every 5 minutes.
Yeah, that is for real, because if you take people's phones away so that they start to get anxious, what we're actually saying is that their level of chemistry inside them is beginning to change. It's turning to anxiety. They need to redo the addiction to get themselves right again.
Yep.
Yeah. And that can be true of all kinds of things, computers or phones or.
Yeah. Now that's something I know personally that I need to work on, because it's just a habit just to reach into my pocket, pull out my phone and just.
But that idea we talked about a little while ago about at the end of your working day, you know, is it okay to switch all your media off? And be offline until the following day.
Yeah, well, I do a lot of work at night, really, just because I've got quite a bit on the go, and I haven't got a typical 9-to-5 kind of job, so I can't. I'll sacrifice parts of the day to do other things and then work at night. But I quite like it, like, you know, and I guess does it reflect my relationship with my wonderful wife? Perhaps it does, you know. But I am doing things deliberately to alter it. And one thing I've done actually since I came back from Italy. The wedding I went to, when I was away, I switched my emails off on my phone, my work email, so I only get my personal emails in now. And since coming back, I haven't switched it back on my phone. So the only way I can get my emails is when I open my laptop. And I only typically do that when I'm obviously in the day, or I'm not going to be like on the bus or on the train and check it, because I'd have to connect to my phone and all sorts.
Yeah,
I found that's helped a lot, actually, because what I used to do is... if it was on my phone, I'd check my emails right before I went to bed, or say on a Friday night, knowing that if an email did come in, I'd have to either deal with it right then, or more likely, have it playing on my mind for the whole weekend or the whole night while I'm wake up and have dreams about the job and you're doing, you know. So I don't get that anymore. It's really cool. I found that to be a big help.
Yeah. You just mentioned your lovely wife, and maybe... if we look at love and the connection with another person, it's like an addiction.
You can start singing that song now. Addicted to love.
Yeah. I'll be cool doing that. I'll bring a guitar next time.
Yeah. Go on, sorry, you were saying.
When you're in love with somebody, you get dopamine in your brain. That dopamine is addictive. If that person is taken away from you, you know, divorce, death, whatever, then the loss, the bereavement, is the cold turkey of losing that addictive component.
Mm-hmm.
Makes it sound a bit kind of sterile and clinical, but actually that's what's going on in your system.
Yep.
And then what happens, the person who's lost somebody will keep revisiting that person either in their mind or in photographs or whatever. And it's exactly like someone who's trying to walk away from heroin or cocaine.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the need is to go back and get it. And the thing is that when someone's gone, you can't go back and get it. And if you are committed to getting out of an addiction from a drug, then you can't go back and get it. But you have to go through that process of decontaminating yourself of that habit.
Yep.
Getting it out of your system.
Mm.
Yeah. But it's real. It's real stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You said cold turkey then. I mean, if people are dealing with addictions, let's talk about, yeah, like drug addiction, for example. Is cold turkey a good way to deal with it?
It depends on the person. It does depend on the person. It depends on the addiction. If someone's is heavily dependent on alcohol, particularly, and they drop alcohol, bang, then they start fitting, and they can die from the fits. We give them Librium as they come off the alcohol.
This is pretty heavy, like super serious alcohol. Yeah,
yeah. Someone who is really belting the juice and they stop, they will fit.
Wow.
And in fitting, you can do things like bite your tongue off, which is fun. Or you can actually have a seizure and die from a brain point of view. For some addictions, cold turkey is a really good thing. Nicotine is a really difficult one, and we're playing with it with these electronic cigarette things. What happens with nicotine, one of the reasons it's so addictive, is that in every nerve in the body, the nerves that run from your head to your foot are in bits. It's not one nerve. And at each of the junctions where they join together, which is a synapse, nicotine gets involved in that chemical messenger. Mm-hmm. So every synapse in your body, there's millions of things in there, have all got nicotine in them. And that's why it's so addictive. And when people are coming off nicotine, they can feel it in their knees and their elbows, you know, all kinds of odd places. They will get these odd, strange feelings.
Wow.
But it takes 3 days to break the cycle. If you can cold turkey for 3 days, drink loads and loads of water and just flush it all out of your system, after 3 days, it's coming out of the synapses. So that the addictive quality starts to drop fairly quickly after 3 days. After that, you're into more kind of psychological addiction. You know, obviously, there's stuff to come out of your
system. Well, I know plenty of people who have tried to quit smoking on many an occasion have done well for weeks and weeks, even months, some occasions.
But then they're back in.
And then they're back on. You're like, well, what, how? Why is that?
It's because the trigger into the behaviour is an emotion. What usually happens is, and you'll see it with people that smoke, is that something will happen that upsets them. Maybe they're angry or whatever. And they'll go, and they'll go out and smoke a fag. So they kind of suppress and sublimate dealing with the emotion into the addiction. And that is a really, really powerful thing to understand in addictions, is that for most people, people are avoiding doing what they need to do.
Mm.
So say someone is unhappy. So they start eating carbohydrates to feel better. What they should be doing is dealing with their unhappiness.
Yeah.
Yeah, rather than drugging themselves with the carbs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and in psychospeak, that's displacement. I've now displaced the energy that I should have been using to solve my problem into eating. Yeah, and to going to get the money and doing the shopping to get the food to eat. You know, in terms of this whole set of behaviours, as opposed to using that energy to solve my problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cigarettes, classic. You want to punch someone on the nose in the workplace and you go outside and have a fag instead.
Yeah.
Yeah. And whether it's going to have a glass of wine, have another cup of coffee, yeah, whatever it is that people do. People playing squash. I love it watching people play squash because people are usually not hitting the ball. You look at their face and it's like, as they hit the ball, and I don't know who they're hitting.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's that kind of energy that's involved in it.
Yeah, it's quite cool. I'm working in an office with a group of guys at the moment, 2-3 days a week, and it's like in a little town nearby. Mm. So it's quite cool working in that environment. It's got a big window, so I can see basically a load of people walking past. And it's funny, you get to know the same people that walk past every day.
Yeah.
And it's the same people that come out for a cigarette from the office next door or whatever.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's one lady actually who she'll come out at least once or twice a day and she'll pace up and down with a cigarette. Yeah, and I just kind of think, wonder what's going on in her head, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, fascinating.
Yeah. But the thing is that we get into those habits without thinking about it, which is the whole idea about do we inherit these things, do we learn them, where do they come from? But if we take the time to stop and review what we're doing with our lives and question why are we doing it, you know, why do you read the paper you read? Why do you vote for the people that you vote for?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is it that's locked these habits into your system? And when you question them, quite often the habits become invalid.
Yeah.
People look at what they're doing, and the question is, why am I doing this? Mm-hmm. And very often, either I don't know, or I'm just doing it because, well, that's what we've always done. Yeah. And when you look at things, very often behaviour changes then, because right. it's irrelevant.
Yeah. I mean, looking at this lady out the window, and this leads to another question. I don't know, you know, but if I did, even though I did, I mean, smoking's one, you can tell friends and family, you know, you need to quit. And it's like, and they'll say, yeah, I know, not doing anything about it. But it's hard, isn't it, to tell people that you know, even that you know really closely and love, that they need to change something about themselves. And then we said before we came on that will have the reverse effect.
It does, yeah. It's actually got a name. There's a guy called Emil Coué. And if you look up Coué's Law of Reversed Effort,
yeah.
What happens is that if you get on someone's case and you moan at them for their behaviours, you make it worse. So if you say to someone, you must stop smoking right now, they're going to smoke twice as many fags. Yeah. The trick about changing people's behaviours, including changing your own behaviour, because if you get angry with yourself about your behaviours, you have Coué's Law of Reversed Effort will hit you as well. If you nudge people, which takes us back to, we mentioned it before, the nudge book, learning to nudge yourself, learn to nudge people in the right direction. Yep. And that can be about, if you praise good behaviours rather than criticise negative behaviours, you get a quicker change.
Mm.
It's that kind of stuff. Learning to nudge things in the right direction.
Yeah, I'm playing with all that stuff with Will, you know, watching him grow up and trying to nudge him, yeah, I guess. Yeah. Although I haven't read the book. But
yeah, it's worth reading, it's a good read.
Certainly as kids become like teenagers, that reverse law, just they'll do the exact opposite of everything you say, right?
Yeah. yeah. But if you nudge, then they will just automatically go towards the nudge.
Yeah.
Yeah, because good nudges will nudge people without them even realising they're being nudged. And when I'm doing couples work, couples therapy, nudging is a really useful tool in couples, because we settle into habitual roles which are like addictions in relationships, you know, you do that, I do this kind of stuff, or ways of being with each other, you know, we snap at each other at certain things because that's what we learn to do with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you learn to nudge each other,
nudge, love that word, right? Yeah, it's a cool word, isn't it?
Yeah,
sorry, yeah.
Have a good nudge in your relationship, then you can change behaviours.
Yeah,
good.
Yeah, the last paragraph that this email sent to us, and I don't even know where it'll take us, but I liked it. Even when I am enlightened to something, it makes me wonder what else I am currently blind to, and therefore what am I putting out there to others? What behaviour is a strategy? What is a habit formed from someone else's strategy? What is intrinsic and what is truth? Blimey. Get some deep thinkers listening to this show, don't we?
I think that when you look at that, it all describes this issue of waking up.
Mm.
The habits that we develop are unconscious. Some of them will be instinctual. Most mammals will be scared of certain things. If you get a little puppy dog and you just hold it over water, its feet will start moving like it's swimming in the water automatically. It does it. It's like an instinctual response. And we're full of those kinds of things. But they're only there because we don't question them. And whether the habits that we form are inherited or whether they're learned, where they come from, isn't really the issue. The issue is our ability to observe them and to decide what we want. So that idea about what do you really, 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 really want is such a really important question.
Yep.
And because it makes you question what it is that you've got and decide whether you want it. And it may be what you've got is what you want, and that's great. You know, mm-hmm. you can live your life with a smile. Yeah, but if it's not right, if the habits that you've developed in behaviours, whether it's the habits of going to work, doing certain things in certain ways, and they need to change to habits that serve you better, yeah, if you're aware of that and you're working towards it, then your life will progressively get better.
Yeah.
Someone said to me, how would you define a good person? And I'm thinking, that's a really good question. So my definition of a good person is someone who's getting better at it. Because it doesn't matter whether you're a nurse, a doctor, an artist, a web designer, if you're getting better at it all the time, in the end, you're going to be pretty good. Yeah. So it doesn't matter from where you start. As long as you're consciously attempting to get better at being a human being, in the end, you're going to be a pretty cool human being.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that's all it requires. If the habit is, today I'm going to be better than I was yesterday, and tomorrow I'm going to be better than I am today, then I'm going to move forward. And if that's a habit, that's what I do.
Yeah. One of the things I think is a positive addiction for me And I think it relates to the first line of this the lady that emailed us. Even when I'm enlightened to something, it makes me wonder what else I'm currently blind to. And that just gets me thinking that this person is going to be all right, because she obviously gets a bit of a kick out of learning new things.
Yeah.
That's, for me, that's something that I love doing. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm addicted to my phone and reading stuff and watching TED Talks and listening to podcasts and what have you, but I think, I'm addicted to learning new things. And the people that I admire most in the world, and just look at my resource of the week's linked to this, are the people that just get a kick out of learning, you know?
Yeah.
Like Stephen Fry, Alan de Botton, Tim Ferriss, all those guys.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's lifelong learning, staying young, it's all that kind of stuff. It feeds in. Yeah. Yeah, I love it. It's good.
Mm.
It's good. And I think that the only thing anyone listening to this needs to look at is, what are you doing and what do you want to do? Yeah? And all you are is the things that you've learned to be. And if you don't like those things, you can learn to be things that you want to be.
We're pretty adaptable, we humans, aren't we?
Magic of being a human being.
We are awesome. We are amazing.
Well, I am.
So. We are the gods. Yeah, okay. Anything else you'd like to talk about, Sean?
No, I think that if we're looking at self-help habits, self-help strategies, then it is. I think anybody should sit down and do a T-diagram. Which is a piece of paper which you make a T on, so you split the paper in two. And on one side of the side, left-hand side, I do things that I don't like and things that I do like about my life. And I would list them all down and start looking at what are the habits that lead to these behaviours, and how can I do more of the things that make me feel good and less of the things that make me feel bad? Because then I'm going to be changing my life.
Yep.
And that's the key, isn't it? If you do the same things in the same way, and so it's the same habits, it's always going to have the same outcome.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true forever, unless you do something about it. This is your opportunity to review, maybe change.
Mm.
Yeah, and get yourself happy.
Cool.
Or happier.
Yeah, all right. I like it. I like it. I think we're all done, aren't we?
Yep.
For this week, you got a resource for us?
I've got a resource. My resource is up on the site. It's the Castle Craig Hospital Addiction Recovery App, and it's a little kind of blog post that lists lots of apps that help people that are going through different addictive issues, and you can load those apps onto your phone or your slab or tab or
your slab or whatever.
Yeah. Stick it on, and a slablet. I like that. Yeah, and then you can they just help. It's support, isn't it? If you're trying to change a habit, sometimes you need the nudge of the support of either another person, which is what happens in things like Alcoholics Anonymous. You get a sponsor who's your nudger,
and
nudges you towards other behaviours. Or if you're using modern technology, the apps are there nudging you too.
Mm.
Yeah.
Cool. I like that. Yeah, I'll take a look at that. Mine is. It's a YouTube channel, and it'll lead to loads of other things, but it's a guy called Jason Silver, who's an American personality. He's got TV shows on National Geographic, but he's got his own YouTube channel as well, which it's called Shots of Awe, AWE, Shots of Awe.
Mm.
And it's little, he calls them like espresso-sized length videos, which will just get you positive, get you inspired. And there's loads of other long videos by him and talks. And he did a Tim Ferriss podcast interview, which is what switched me on to him. Now, I had seen him in the past. But yeah, this guy, man, he obviously just... Oh, there's a dog barking out there. He obviously likes... He's a very interesting one, I've got to say. That's Sadie next door, that is. Sadie! Quiet down.
Is that a habit that she's got?
Yeah. At this time, every day, loving, she comes out barking. Nice dog. Yeah, Shots of Awe, Jason Silver. Check it out, the YouTube channel, and dive deeper into his world, because he's one of the people that I think I'm going to be following him in the coming months and years, because I think he's just going to keep me motivated, keep me interested in life.
Sounds good.
If you're bored with life, you need to switch on to things like this, man.
For me, the issue of lifelong learning is paramount, and we really do have to pay attention to that. The people that I am involved with who are involved in learning and new experience have a whole different aura about them. They're brighter, they're enjoying being alive. You know, it's great.
Yeah.
And that's a habit to get into.
Hang out with those people.
In addiction.
Online or in real life. Righto, next week we've got a guest interview.
Yeah.
With a nice man called Chris.
Yeah.
And we're going to be talking about...
Looking forward to that.
Yeah, finding spirituality in everyday life.
Yeah.
We're going to meet Chris next week on Monday, aren't we? Yeah. And have a good chat with him.
Yeah.
He's got a website too, which we'll tell you all about next week. That will be cool. I like doing the guest interview ones, man. They're good laugh. In the meantime, go to liveinthepresent.co.uk, get all the show notes for this week's show, the blog post, a few free bits and bobs. If you put your email address in, we'll send you some free meditation files, which hundreds, nay, thousands of people have found pretty useful, I think. So check that out. Have a go. Let us know what you think. If you'd like us to talk about anything in the future, drop us an email at podcast@liveinthepresent.co.uk. And we may or may not talk about it. Probably will. There's a pretty good chance we will, actually.
Yep.
Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and all that stuff as well. And have yourselves a wonderful week. Sean, take care.
I will, and you take care.
Let's get out there. Let's get learning.
Woo! Come on.
Ciao. See you later.
Bye.
Bye.